When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
On this edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad, we catch up with new Magic Hall of Famer, Magic Executive, former Magic General Manager, John Gabriel, kind enough to join us, and what a conversation we had. It's brought to you by the Florida Department of Transportation, and they remind you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Instead, find a sober driver or catch a ride service. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over. Have a great night and drive safe. Oh, we take a nice stroll down memory lane with former Magic General Manager John Gabriel, including how he got his big break in the NBA, how he beat the door down for the Philadelphia 76ers to get in the year they won the NBA title in 82-83. It struck up a lifelong relationship with Pat Williams, who brought him here to City Beautiful. We rehashed that incredible summer of 2000 where John Gabriel nearly had Tim Duncan, Tracy McGrady, and Grant Hill all here in Orlando, and the decision to push so hard for Penny Hardaway when the Magic drafted Chris Webber and made that trade for Penny. So many stories with John Gabriel on this edition of Magic Pod Squad.
This is Jalen Suggs of the Orlando Magic.
This is Jonathan Isaac.
This is Mo Bamba.
This is Cole Anthony.
This is Franz Wagner of the Orlando Magic, and this is the Pod Squad.
And welcome, everyone, to another edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. Oh, we got a fun one playing for you here today. Dante Marcatelli, Jeff Turner, George Galante, with Magic Executive John Gabriel, kind enough to join us. And I guess, guys, we got to call him Magic Hall of Famer now, right?
I was going to say, that's not the right introduction, Dante.
Yes, like, I know.
It's Orlando Magic Hall of Famer, John
Orlando
Gabriel.
Orlando Magic
now.
Hall of Famer. Does that have a nice ring to it, Gabe? Magic Hall of Famer?
I think that's the correct addressing. Yeah, that's what I went from now on. I'm a pretty big deal now. But one of my strongest attributes is my humility.
Perfect. Well, everybody's got to stand when Gabe comes by. Make sure he's down the hall before you sit back down. We're good to go.
I hope you have somebody, Gabe, delivering your coffee and your newspaper or anything else you need, like I have to do with Hall of Famer David Steele, who, you know, I mean, it's something to this. When you guys get your Hall of Fame jackets made and everything, I'm sure I'll have to take David's to the laundry and all that stuff, get it dry cleaned.
And I think if I heard somebody say something about a check.
Yeah.
We didn't get one.
That was George's. That's George's department.
They're right. Yeah. Well, just stay by the mailbox. It'll come any minute.
Well, yeah. Gabe, we couldn't have been happier for you. It's such a well-deserved. It was a great ceremony. Such a well-deserved honor to get that recognition. All you've done in sports, anyway, and in the NBA, but certainly here in Central Florida, and the footprint that you have with this Orlando Magic organization. How much did you enjoy the ceremony, and how special was everything going into the Magic Hall of Fame?
You know, we made fun that it didn't take the people from the Northeast a lot of coaxing to come down to 75 degree weather. But I was just in awe of just seeing my brothers and sisters there. My brother works in Dubai and he was in town. And just to be in front of so many people that I love and more importantly, respect. And to do it with B. Hill, too, it was yeah, extra special because he's such a dear friend. And you guys all know what a great guy he is.
Certainly do. You know, this whole thing can be, with professional sports anyway, it can be cutthroat. It can be about what have you done for me lately. It can be about we got to win. We can be about – everything can be about business. But it seems like, Gabe, it seemed like you have a – you always had a – an interest in people. It seemed like it was about relationships. When you do it, you seem to go about it on the relationship side of things. How much did that mean to you? The people that you work with and the relationships you made?
You know, I left in 2004. I went to the Trailblazers for 3 years, worked for them. I commuted from Florida to Portland. And then I was with the Knicks for 7 to 8 years. And it just never, you know, it's hard to explain, but it never felt like home. And for Alex to ask me to come back as an advisor was just a huge day. One of the, you know, bigger days in my memory. So it was really important. And, you know, the growing pains are hard that we're going through right now. But to me, you know, you got to work at it every day. You know, to everybody else, to quote Rocky, to everybody else, Wednesday was the Hall of Fame day. For me, it was Wednesday.
That's great.
See, it's a good thing David's not here because he's never seen Rocky. Like, he's never seen any of the Rockies. So it's a good thing that David's not with us. There was, you know, Gabe, I thought, I mean, knowing you guys for a long time, I thought I had heard all the stories I could possibly hear. But then as the ceremonies are going on, there was a story about how you and Brian had met on the beach in Hawaii in 1993. Can you rehash that story for us? Because I had never heard it until that day. And I just found it fascinating that that's how you guys really had your first connection.
Well, it was the draw of Brian and Mike Fratello that made me take note of how organized they were, serious about each game, their preparation. And that was something that really impressed me about Brian. You know, we were starting up new. That's the one good thing that Pat did. I came in 87, so I had 2 years where we didn't win any games. We didn't have any we didn't have uniforms. We didn't have an arena for that matter. So we got Matty Gukas, who was flirting with going to Charlotte. And because we were 2 years out and Charlotte and Miami came in ahead of us, as you recall. So it was a good time to prep. And then Brian's work sort of spoke for itself as he eventually became head coach in the early 90s.
Gabe, you mentioned you came to Orlando in 87 with Pat, but I don't know that people really know the backstory. You kind of talked about it, what you were doing after college and how you got into the NBA. Take us through that a little bit, but starting your own business, doing some other things before you got to the NBA.
Yeah, I was teaching in Reading, Pennsylvania, and basically this is meant as a shout out to all teachers, starving to death on my $9,000 a year salary as a teacher. That's a year.
Wow.
And I went to Atlantic City. My brother ran Atlantic City race course. I became a New Jersey racing official, climbed the pole and watched the ponies go around to call fouls. But before I did that, I cut lawns during the day in Gabe's Lawn Service. Wow. I had about 110 accounts that myself and one other gentleman did. And I would stop every day at this diner. I think the damn phone's still there, payphone. And would call the Sixers, and this woman would answer and say, "I'm sorry, he's not available." I said, "Well, I hear you're trading for Moses Malone." And her tagline was, can't confirm it, can't deny it. And I said, you know, can I get an interview with somebody? I went into the box office and eventually worked myself into basketball ops, took advantage of the medium video, which was they were going from film to VHS. And all the coaches and the players thought there was electricity in the coaxial cable, so they wouldn't touch it. And they had me hook up their VCRs. I'm in Billy Cunningham's house, hooking up his VCR, and so Julius Erving in his room, Dr. J, and then eventually Jack McMahon, God rest his soul, got sick, and they said, "Have you ever been to Hawaii for the Aloha Classic?" I said, "I haven't been past Pittsburgh." And I flew to Hawaii to start scouting. Before I knew it, I was director of pro scouting, sitting on the bench, the director of college scouting, and I wrote and produced all the TV commercials, which we did one almost every 2 weeks because we couldn't sell tickets. And then I just worked my way up the ladder. And I think Pat needed somebody that did a little bit of everything when he came to the Magic in 87. And I think that was my ticket in.
Well, didn't they know you were busy scouting? They say you got to go write these commercials. Didn't somebody else pick up that slack?
George, I'd sit with Matty Kukas after a game in the locker room, and we would review the game, and then I would go help Jeff Millman, who was the equipment manager, fold towels, and then I'd get in my car with my beach blanket on top of my lap and eat my dinner on the drive back to Delaware where I lived. And then I kept a pad by my right hand, and I would write the commercials that were coming up. And the other thing that was really fun is that was the championship year that I first started in 82, 83. I used everybody in the entire office in one commercial or other. So it really not only brought the team together, but brought the staff together.
That's incredible.
George, Dante, I know you do because I do too. I'll get young people all the time, and they'll say, "Hey, I want to get into professional sports. You know, I want to do this. I want to work in this department." And I was like, "How do I do that?" And I always tell them, "You just got to get in the door first." And you know, to me, Gabe's example is exactly, you know, his willingness to do whatever job needed to be done. Just do it. Make yourself valuable. And that's John Gabriel. And that's why he was so successful when he finally did get his opportunity, in my opinion.
My good friend Tim Malloy wrote a book. It's called The One Thing. And he spoke to 30 executives, and they gave the one thing that was most important to them. And mine was, as you're saying, make yourself indispensable. And Tim's book's doing quite well. But there's a lot of interesting stories in that book. By example, if you draw it, there was one chapter on a gentleman that says, if you can draw it, they will learn it. And it was showing the importance of visuals. So I use that also as part of what I do for Jeff and John.
That's awesome. You know, Gabe, I think about you. You know, you played basketball, right? You get a scholarship. You play at Kutztown State, and you play. Did you always love basketball? Like, where did this all begin? And guys, I know you guys have played against Gabe. It's the only time he guarded me. I played against Gabe one time. It's the only time I played a pickup game, and I never got the ball. Only time. Never happened before. That guy was relentless. I couldn't get open for a second, but. You played the game. What made you, where did that passion come from? What made you want to call the Sixers every day? What made you get to the point where you had to beat down the door and get into an NBA job?
Well, I left out a line in my acceptance speech that I played with Tom Stirner. We owned the playgrounds from the time we were in the third grade on across the street, but it was going against my two older brothers, Pat and Frank, who were just better than me. And I sort of learned and cut my teeth on that. And then I found a weird thing happened in college. I started as a sophomore at Kutztown University. We played the best teams we played against back then were Mount St. Mary's, Lehigh University, and Towson State. They were the best teams we played against. So it wasn't very good basketball, but I got player of the year 2 years in a row. And I went into the Hall of Fame and I averaged, Jeff, listen to this, 8 points and 4 rebounds. But I shot like 65% from the floor because I wouldn't take a bad shot. So I earned it by playing defense, you know, which is a side of the other side of the ball that most people don't play. So I sort of learned that you can sort of earn your wings and you know, by doing things that others aren't really willing to or can't do.
And then from there, did you just want to still be with basketball? What made you want to get in with the Philadelphia 76ers so badly?
Well, I was living in Reading, Pennsylvania, and I'd walk up to the corner pub who had cable, because I didn't, and watch the Sixers play. And this was still the McGinnis, George McGinnis years, and Julius before they got Malone. And I just fell in love with it. I liked the college game. I was an assistant coach at Kutztown, and I coached at Trinity High School in Harrisburg. But I had a chance to get into the bigs, and John Nash was at the racetrack working with my brother, and he ended up being the GM under Pat Williams, or assistant GM under Pat Williams. So I knew there was a door. And Jeff, as you said, you know, to get your foot in the door via a contact is really what it's all about. And I always advise young players to do that. And if they're in the game, don't leave it, because there's no promise you'll get back in.
Gabe, I think it's, you know, pretty, we've talked a lot about at the Hall of Fame and everything is your ability to evaluate talent. And so I'm going to throw this one out to you. This might be enlightening for George and Dante as well. You know, in those early days of the Magic, you're putting together a team, right? And you have the expansion draft and then you're having the draft, but you got to fill out the roster. You got to sign free agents to fill out your roster. And you had to evaluate a young man that, you know, kind of played in the NBA, was a first round draft pick, you know, not successful necessarily in New Jersey that took him. He went overseas, and for some reason, you know, you worked this kid out. He's a left-handed shooter. You worked him out, and you decided to sign him. What was that all about? I mean, you're supposed to be a talent evaluator. How did that happen?
I was on a drunken binge. I guess.
You asked for it, Jeff.
You had a couple guys really pulling for you from the league, number one. And number two, you know, I don't know that I can't say that I had the foresight to realize how important a floor spreader. Jeff was one of the first bigs that was a floor spreader, which is so important in these days in the league. And and that was really it. And you had good representation, who Uncle Warren.
He pushed pretty hard, didn't he?
Warren pushed pretty hard. You were the best thing since sliced bread in Warren's eyes. And thank God we signed you. I'm sorry I scared you all those years thinking you were going to be traded during that period of 57 transactions in 15 months.
That's right.
How many times times did Jeff think he was going, Gabe? How many times?
He'd run.
Every year.
The story we hear is he got tired of dumping it down to the big fella. He didn't understand why he couldn't get more shots. He wanted more threes, Gabe. We couldn't make that happen.
You know, I can just remember, Jeff, was it the Chicago series in the playoffs? Or I don't know how many points you had in the game, the winning game, but I can remember you drilling them.
That was the game that Horace had the hand injury late in game six. And, you know, I kid Brian because the, you know, the funny story is like, it was matchups, right? Like I played, I didn't play a whole lot in the Boston series, played a little bit in Chicago, played a lot in the Indiana series because, you know, the Davis guy, you know, playing the two Davises playing at the power forward. But Brian didn't think that was a great matchup for me with Tony Kukoc and, at the time. And so Horace goes down and I hadn't played a lot and it's the fourth quarter. And Brian looks at me and he said, all right, you're in. I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, it was made a couple of buckets, but it was, you know, just a great time to be part of that. So I never thought Gabe was necessarily going to trade me. It's just that, you know, he just kept trying to bring in people all the time, you know, to replace me. That was the thing that, you know, it's like, come on, Gabe, give me a break here. You know, you just keep bringing in more guys. But ultimately, guys, he did trade me, Gabe. I think I might have been one of the first trades just for salary cap purposes. And as you began to look towards the future as well, right, when you sent me to Vancouver for Kenny Gattison.
Yeah. Yeah. And were you there when they collapsed Vancouver?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I never went. I never went.
He said, I'm not going. He said, I'm not going there.
Forget he said, radio it. Sounds good. Radio sounds radio. Good from here.
I made a lot of deals like that, Dante, where I'd say, you know, and to people that I end up working for, damn it, like Kevin Pritchard, say, Kevin, you've just been traded to the Magic, but don't get too excited. Don't pack a bag because I'm going to move you in the next 10 minutes.
I can imagine. I can imagine. You know, we hear the stories about the drafting of Chris Webber, but you really pushed, Gabe, to get Penny Hardaway. You really liked that fit. And then Pat, you know, asked for 5 first-round draft picks, got 3. I love that story too. But can you take us back to that? Why did you push so hard for Penny Hardaway? And what were those conversations like with Pat? Because from what we understand, ultimately you want him over, but he wasn't really up for that in the beginning, right?
Yeah. Chris was maybe a brighter star, you know, at Michigan, if I remember correctly. And Penny was playing for us, you know, a lower Division I school in a way. And I really appreciated that he very willingly came back and worked out a second time for us. And I remember when he was done working out, I said, just stop up and see me in the office at RDV before you leave, buddy. So he did. And he said, well, how did I do, Mr. Gabriel? Did you decide yet? I said, no. I said, just enjoy the day. I can't tell you right now what I'm going to do, but You know, I want you to know I appreciate what you did coming in and working out. And he had a great workout. And he got up out of the chair, went to the door. And I said, can you shut that behind you? And the door popped back open and he stuck his head in. He said, Mr. Gabriel, he goes, if you sign for me, if you draft me, you'll never regret it. I promise you. I said, thanks, Penny. I said, enjoy the day. And that was the decision. And I also, Jeff, you would know this, and you probably all remember, it's the fact that the power of an inside-outside game, you know, having a big that can handle just about anybody in Shaquille, and having Penny who could see over everybody. We were bigger, Jeff, than any team we played against at 2 positions before the ball went in the air. We gave them matchup problems. Yep. Nick was pretty daggone good in the post, too.
Yes, he was.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's Leesa.com/iHeart.
I've told you guys this, that, at the time, you just didn't get the top three picks or whatever, just come in and work out like that. And back in those days, I don't know if it was legal or not. I don't think you can do this anymore, but a lot of us that were in town were at that workout with Penny, and we played full court, and a lot of us walked out of there thinking, okay, this kid's going to be really special. And there was no doubt to that. I'm really disappointed, Gabe. I thought maybe you were going to say, you told Pat, look, we've got Jeff Turner. Why do we need Chris Weber at the power forward? We need a guard. But that's, I'm sure.
They never came up. Yeah.
Actually, that thought never crossed my mind. Oh, that's great. What can you tell us?
David, we could go on tour. I could be a straight man the whole
please
time.
Please do it. Right? Please do it. Don't let us stop you. Keep going. Please, don't let us stop you.
Oh, man.
What can you tell us about Shaq, Gabe? When you get Shaq on the scene, and I missed that by 2 years, Keel O'Neal, when I first started here, but getting him in here, that dynamic of a personality in this town, in this market, with a new team, I mean, I'm sure there were challenges, but it just had to have been, for the most part, just had to have been fantastic having that guy here in town.
And with the draft coming upon us really quick, Shaquille's an example of once every 10 years, once every 15 year guy that comes around, like Duncan and
LeBron, probably
LeBron and those guys. I wish we were in one of those years, where if we got the first pick, you set the franchise on his shoulders and go from there. But it was interesting. The thing that people forget, and this is sort of eye opening to those that are interested in the details of the game, the league incorporated the first collective bargaining agreement for 3 years that didn't have restricted free agency on it. So Penny and Shaquille were free to go wherever they wanted to go as free agents as their rookie deals unfolded. And that gave them a ton of leverage to say, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to command cap-wise. the cap wasn't as hard of a cap as it is now. And I had to go to Shaquille and say, you know, Bob said, go tell him, Rich wants you to go tell him that he's got to share the money with Penny. And that didn't go over very well.
I can't imagine it did.
No, I wouldn't think so.
You know, so it was, you know, we lost Shaquille at the end of the day without any compensation coming back, no draft picks, nothing. We were just left out in the cold.
I think they changed that the next year. I think
they realized it was a mistake.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Now, Gabe, now the 95 era kind of goes away and you're coming up on 1998, 99, and you decide that it's time to just reshape the franchise. And there are 55 transactions involved in one summer involving 51 players. Nobody had ever seen anything like it. Talk about what your mindset was going into that summer and then how it ended up, you know, maybe having come out better than you had ever thought it would that season, because obviously everybody had predicted we would win 10, 12 games and we were on the cusp of making the playoffs that year. And that kind of just that changed the franchise again.
Yeah, I don't want to blow smoke up my GM skirt, but, you know.
We're trying to do it for you a little bit.
Or sound right. Too ostentatious, but you guys spoke earlier about relationships. And I really felt, and probably a little naive on my part, but I felt like I had a good relationship with just about every GM in the league. And that I didn't have really any malice in my negotiations. And so I thought every GM thought it was a win-win and that helped make the moves. And people weren't used to using salary cap room that early in the 90s. They didn't realize the value of it. And then couple that with the fact that I had great relationship with David Falk, who represented a ton of players then, Arne Tellem, who was one of his proteges, Lon Babby, and the current GM for drawing a blank for the Knicks.
Yeah, Leon Rose.
Leon Rose.
And I think that helped me quite a bit. Those guys, you know, wanted their players in Central Florida.
Yeah. Okay.
And the DeVosses. And Alex, who helped put together the recruiting schematic, really, really helped go after things. But I didn't do it as a group. We didn't do it until we knew we were sort of done. And we lost the series with Philly. We were what?
We were the second seed. Yeah.
And they were the seventh. And I went to get a cheeseburger after the game with Joel, who is not only great at what he did in PR and media relations, but he was a good friend. And I said, come have a burger with me. And I said, and we talked about, you know, paying Penny and keeping the team on or breaking it up. And we got done the burger around 12:30. I said, I think I need another burger because I'm not set yet. And we went across the street in Philly and had another cheeseburger, and then I just sort of decided I can't do what's popular. I got to do what's right for the franchise, and that's when we broke it up.
How hard was that to sell, though, to the franchise? I mean, that's like you said, that's a really, really tough decision for you.
Well, I flew to Grand Rapids to meet with Rich DeVos, and you know, I said I think I can make it happen, but will it sell? You know, will it sell to the owner? Will it sell to the fans? And as we were making the deals, you know, things were working and clicking pretty good. You could aggregate players back then together and send three out for three in. Now you can't aggregate them. They put a lot of restrictions on what we did. And we made it happen. And I remember Joel was coming in as the guy that needed to announce the deals. And he kept coming in my office like every 20 minutes. I said, "Call Joel, we need to make another announcement." I said, Joel, I don't know what I'm doing here. And he says, "It doesn't matter. It's selling. I love it. Keep going."
Oh, that's great.
So he should have cheered me on and kept saying, you know, we've gone this far. Let's keep going till we ended up with the cap room. And we played a little defense too, because we had multiple picks in our also, which is similar to where we are today. Yep. I think I had five additional first round picks, and I would bring the players in the video room and say, the prospects, and say, not only are we going to be good because we won 41 games the year before in a rebuilding year, I said, but nobody can catch us. You know, we're young. We've got draft picks. We've got great ownership. Nobody can catch us. And that pissed off Jerry Krause and a couple others.
that's great. That heart and hustle team, Gabe, did you coin that? Was that your phrase, heart and hustle? Where did that come from?
I'll share it with Chris Dorso. He came up to me and said, you know, we're chatting. We had a fun relationship with everybody in the office. You know, we all did a little bit of everything. And he said, who's going to be like on the cover of the media guide? He said, well, we got four guys that are undrafted. No one's seen an all-star game or even a ballot. And I said, we're going to work real hard and we're going to hustle. And he said, we'll come up with heart and hustle as the theme. And that was it.
Oh, man, that's cool. Awesome. That's great. You know, you had Darryl here already. You had some pieces. I want to get your thoughts on Ben Wallace. How did the Ben Wallace thing happen? Where did you find him? And what did you like about Ben? And I know you couldn't have never, no one could have predicted what he ended up becoming.
But Ben wasn't Ben when he came to us. And, you know, we heard good things about him, and he was a hard worker, which was something you had to be to make it on the roster. And the thing that was problematic with retaining him, even though we tried to go back and do the deal with him also that year, was that Bo Outlaw played for us for 3 years at the minimum. And Bo shot 58% from the line. Jeff, help me with this, but I think Ben didn't shoot much better.
No, it's probably worse, actually.
Sure it was. Yeah.
So tell me this: what happens at the end of a game?
Right. Those are the guys you got to pull them out, or that's the people they put on the line.
Yeah. Exactly. So you can only play one or the other. That's right, Jeff. So Ben's numbers before he left and became MVP were like 18 minutes, 6 points, and 6 rebounds. He was so far from being the MVP that he ended up being in Detroit. And I couldn't give the money to both of them. So out of loyalty, you know, we paid Bo.
But you liked him. That's just an amazing find. I just think that's, you liked him enough to bring him in here. You know, and I think, when did you know that heart and hustle team, when did you know you had something? Because I know the plan was to kind of rebuild and clear the deck, but at some point you had to know you had something. Then you make a trade to try to help them get to the postseason.
Yeah. You know, once we had Bo and Darryl, they really helped a lot of coaches, you know, in this case, and GMs. You know, Doc got Coach of the Year and I got Executive of the Year. The preceding or following year, Darryl was the only player to get Most Improved and Sixth Man.
Yes.
And they would guard, guys, I don't know if you remember, but they would guard 90 feet. Mm-hmm. I think Bo, Jeff, it's called shadowing, right? When you go to the backcourt and help the point guard contain the point guard as a center, then you got to sprint back and pick up the man. And I think Bo coined that a little bit. And they guarded 90 feet. And people would come up to me and say, man, that's an amazing trap you put in. I said, there's no trap. We don't even practice.
Yeah. But what's funny is I tell people all the time, the minute that Darryl joined the team, and that, you know, that was, you know, back in that with the 94-95 crew at the end of the season. And then in the training camp the following year, he picked up, he in practice, you know, it didn't matter. He picked up guys I'll tell you, Penny, Brian Shaw, those guys hated Daryl. There was no love for Daryl because he played the way he played. You saw him in the game every second he was on the floor. With practice, a drill, it didn't matter. And he was a pest.
And to caveat that, Jeff, I think there was a practice that he called off at RDV. Guys weren't working. He said, we're not going to work here. He said, we're not going to play. And he kicked everybody off the He closed practice. He kicked everybody out of the gym. Yeah. We weren't working hard enough. But I could appreciate that so much too. I had a minimal basketball playing career, but defense was my thing, and I would introduce myself. Usually had the leading scorer, whether he was a forward or guard, and I'd introduce myself to him and say, "I'm John Gabriel. You're not going to touch the ball tonight."
Yeah.
That's what he did to Dante.
That's what he did to me. RV, I'm telling you.
Hey, Gabe, real quick, you talked about like during all those transactions, and so the league, the rules changed about what you could do and everything like that. But in the end, you went out and you had space to go and to recruit. You targeted three free agents in Grant Hill, Tracy McGrady, and Tim Duncan, and you got two of them. Without rehashing all that, I just want to looking forward. Can that still be done? Like, is that something in today's environment with the way that, the cap is and the rules and the way players do? Can you go out and sign free agents like that the way you did it back then? Or are the rules kind of limited that?
The rules kind of limited, Jeff, but you still can do it. But what I think we see now is that you want to put yourself – you want to use your room – sense your cap room sensibly and judiciously at the right time. And a lot of times now what we see, and I'm not nuts about it, is that players that are coming into, like, their free agent year the next year – go to ownership and say, I want out. I want to go play somewhere else. Unfortunately, it's usually a West Coast team, the Lakers or the Clippers, but Miami is a destination. And I think we can be a destination again over time where players say, I want to go play there. And I'm not trying to circumvent the cap or claim that you can collude with a team and a player, but that's a lot of times what happens. And if you're not if you don't have the cap room, you can't be part of the trade. Or unless you don't have, or if you have a player that salary is big enough, you trade the player that you have and multiple firsts, and then maybe you can get in the game, as we saw what happened with Philadelphia and the Nets.
All right, Gabe, can you clear this up for us? Did you got Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill. Did you almost have all three, or did you have two? Was it always going to be two guys, or did you come close to having all three?
We moved into our house in Winter Park, I had sent the family to the Jersey Shore, so everybody was gone, and I got a call from Lon Babby. He goes, "You son of a gun," because he wants to come to Orlando. And my heart about jumped out of my chest. And I said, okay, it was, I immediately got on the phone with people smarter than me, which wasn't hard to do. And called the guys from Jones Day Law Firm and Scott Herring and said, can we make it work if we cut up the pie, evenly? And we could have gotten all three.
That's amazing. But that call was about Tim Duncan. Tim, you got a call from his agent saying he wants to come. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the story is that David Robertson was vacationing in Hawaii and flew a private plane back to San Antonio and made sure he didn't leave.
Darn Admiral. Got us again. Admiral. Well, how about I hate that guy. Fast forward to now, Gabe, you mentioned it a couple of times, the situation that this team is in now. kind of similar thing. You cleared the deck, you're rebuilding, you've got some young talent, but you've got draft capital as well. How quickly can this thing, can the current situation turn around here in Orlando?
Well, you know, what we're doing right now is exactly, you know, I will no power or influence, but I feel like we're doing exactly what we need to do. We're looking at players and prospects, number one. Number two, we're getting guys experience on the floor. Three, we're getting guys with that experience time with the players that they could play with. Four, we're creating camaraderie and a bit of a theme to who we are, a culture. And you know, I think if watch this now, do you know how many teams were involved in trades during the trade deadline?
No, but I think 28? You're going to
tell me. Gabe, will you just tell us what it is?
Tell us, Gabe, please.
Please.
It was 27.
27.
More, you know, there was the 1 year, remember, George, where we were the only team to make a trade.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
It was for a guard.
Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember when it was, but you're right. We were the only ones to trade that time.
We did it more for highlights on the newspaper than we did to get better. But there are 27 teams, and of that 27, you know, most of them were buyers, not sellers. And that's sort of, but the reason I bring it up is sort of speaks to the parity in the league right now. So that wasn't the case when we won the 41 games, but you know, I don't think we're as far away as maybe people think. And we're finding that out. Every game, someone gets a little bit better. Our rookies that we drafted, and Wagner and Suggs and others are really playing well. And it's just that, you know, we're just not being able to finish because it takes that superstar player to get you over the hump and get you that W, particularly down the stretch. But I think we're doing exactly what we should be doing.
And you guys know this, Gabe is still out there scouting. He's still evaluating talent and he's bringing that information to Jeff and John. How valuable is that? That's
awesome. He's rarely wrong, Dante. He's rarely wrong.
Resource.
Rarely wrong.
That's kind
great
of
great resource.
Hey, last thing, Gabe, and then we'll let you go. You do incredible work with the Parkinson's Foundation, and you've raised so much money here in Central Florida. Can we just get an update on that? If people want to get involved, want to help, do you have any events coming up? I think it's amazing what you've done for that cause.
Well, in April, early April, we're having a walk again.
Great.
And we're at Crane's Roost on the first Saturday in April. And, you know, we've raised as much as $180,000 in prior years for that. And then the large part of those dollars goes to Advent Health and to people that have Parkinson's locally. We cut a check to Michael J. Fox to add to the $2 billion that he's raised.
Wow.
And there's a new movement disorder building coming out of the ground. You can see it right after Lee Road and Fairbanks on the left side. And that 10-story building will have two floors and strictly for Parkinson's and movement disorder. So Parkinson's Association of Central Florida, PACF, go look it up. Come walk with us. I'm going to be there. Some of the Magic staff is going to be there. And, you know, you give whatever you want. You can give a dollar, you can give $100. The support will be much appreciated.
Well, I love that. We'd love to be a part of that and be involved as best we can. Gabe, this is a pleasure. We could talk to you for 3 or 4 more hours, but George says we can't do that. So we're going to be mindful of your time.
And he's a Hall of Famer, man. He's a Hall of Famer. He has a time limit now.
I'd love to continue to talk to you guys on more, but I'm not.
See? And that's what the Hall of Famer can do.
That's fantastic. Gabe, like, if I look over your right shoulder, like, are you about to just practice the drums? Like, what, you got something?
Oh, yeah, what do you got there?
This was a present. It's a Roland electronic set. I'm going to create a band, Men with Mortgages. In my next life.
That'll be a hit. I can't wait to hear it. All right,
the neighbor said keep it down over there, by the way.
Keep it down.
Keep it down.
Right. Can't be wailing away on those drums.
Jeez, all two right. in the morning. It gets obnoxious, Gabe.
And yet another thing that we didn't know he does. Unbelievable. Man of many talents. Thanks so much, Gabe. That'll do it for this edition of Magic Pod Squad. We'll see you next time.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyer's.com today.